headlines, Kazakhstan detains several officials, including former security chief, for treason amid continued tensions in the country. The U.S. and NATO again accuse Russia of preparing to attack Ukraine ahead of a security talk, status with Moscow in a bid to de-escalate tensions. And India's daily COVID cases hit a seven-month high as the Omicron variant of the virus overtakes the Delta version in the cities. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi and these are top stories this hour. Kazakhstan's National Security Committee says former security chief Karim Masimov has been arrested on suspicion of treason. That comes as tensions run high in the Central Asian nation following protests over a fuel price hike. The committee says several other officials were also arrested without specifying. Masimov was sacked from his post this week after protesters in the main city of Almaty stormed government buildings. Security forces have now ordered days of violence. Kazakh government says that the unrest has left 44 people dead, including security. And, quote, armed criminals, President Kasym Jomart Tokayev has spoken of an anti-terror operation and ordered law enforcement agencies to fire without warning. The whole country is still under a state of emergency. The unrest began over fuel price hikes, but continued despite the government's resignation. And a group of British lawmakers have warned of a dangerous precedent being set after protesters who toppled the statue of the 17th century slave trader Edward Colston walked free from a British court, cleared of criminal damage charges. But supporters of the people dubbed the Colston Four says that the case was politically motivated and should never have been brought in the first place. Amina Taylor has more.
Cleared of criminal damage charges at Bristol Crown Court, Rhiann Graham, Myla Ponsford, Jake Skuse, and Sage Willoughby, dubbed the Colston Four, celebrated their acquittal in a trial that's divided British public opinion. For those who had been on trial, relief and a sense of vindication.
We are ecstatic and stunned. I tried to write something ready for this moment, and I'm just so overwhelmed.
We didn't change history, we rectified history.
We illuminated history. Daylight, we illuminated history.
And this is the victory for Bristol, this is the victory for racial equality.
And this is where it began, at a Black Lives Matter demonstration in Bristol in June 2020.
I think the courts accepted that this was almost a political show trial, that Boris Johnson and the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, had determined that they wanted to make an example of the Colston Four, and the courts rejected that.
The jury's verdict has garnered mixed reviews, with some MPs writing to the Attorney General, asking him to look once more at the wrong result. Elsewhere, there have been calls for the Home Secretary to explain why this case was so heavily pursued in the first place, and what happens now when that move has seemingly backfired.
The focus is now on high-profile monuments like this one, the statue of Sir Winston Churchill, Britain's lauded World War II leader, but a figure that's being seen increasingly through the lens of his controversial views on race and empire.
New legislation being pushed through under the Police and Crime Bill will make defacing monuments punishable by up to 10 years behind bars.
Women watchers to your station will be surprised to know you can get longer for pulling down a statue under the new provisions than you do for rape, which is absolutely bizarre. But it shows the extent to which this government is intent on pursuing culture wars and criminalising the Black Lives Matter movement.
There is the hope that many local and national stakeholders will use the outcome of the Colston Four trial as a teachable moment, a chance to reflect on Britain's checkered past. But then again, maybe it will just be business as usual. Amina Taylor, London.
In this edition of the News Review, no end in sight to tensions between Washington and Moscow over Ukraine. The U.S. Secretary of State has once again warned Russia over what he called Moscow's aggression.
Russia's aggressive actions are a threat to peace and security in Europe. We're prepared to respond forcefully to further Russian aggression. But a diplomatic solution is still possible and preferable if Russia chooses it.
Blinken also accused Russia of, quote, gaslighting the world with its claim that NATO and Ukraine were threatening Moscow. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has also warned of a major movement of troops in the event of a Russian invasion of NATO countries in its vicinity. The military alliance claims Russia is building up troops in border areas to attack Ukraine. Moscow denies the allegation, saying its movement of troops is defensive as NATO moves closer to its borders. In an effort to ease the rising tensions, U.S. and Russian negotiators are set to hold bilateral talks in Geneva on Monday, which will be followed by a NATO-Russia meeting in Brussels. Now, to discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Tim Kirby, radio host and political analyst, who's joining us live from Moscow, and also Greg Simons, researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for joining us. Let's begin with Mr. Kirby. Mr. Kirby, do you believe that there is actually a political solution to this, or is this all laying the groundwork for more tensions?
Well, there's always a political solution in theory. You could always make a deal. The question is, do people really want to? Will that deal satisfy both sides? I think that something can be worked out. And the fact that the Russians actually laid out a very long but precise list of demands to Washington recently going into the upcoming talks between Putin and Biden, and surprisingly, Washington didn't scoff at them, didn't immediately reject them, which should actually be a cause for hope. Perhaps somewhere between Russia's desire to really deeply push NATO far from its borders back and Washington's desire to expand NATO as far east as it can possibly go, perhaps there can be some sort of compromise position.
Thank you very much. Mr. Simons, Putin and Joe Biden talked over the phone, they have described that conversation constructive. So do you believe that this means that we can be hopeful that these tensions will go away through political means?
I'm a bit more pessimistic on the outcome. The Americans are obviously trying to set the stage to present themselves now before the meeting as some kind of willing and constructive party, and Russia as a less constructive actor and one that needs to be controlled. So what they're trying to do is set the scene where they're using the information environment to set the scene for the cognitive element of what's coming, not only in terms of those at this meeting and negotiation, but the wider audience, where they will try to constrain and contain Russia as they normally do, but pretend that they're trying to do something constructive and Russia is being obstructive. So I do not believe anything concrete will come out of it. And if something does, the United States and has a long history of breaking negotiations and settlements which it has made. So this is another element that needs to be considered.
Exactly. Let's go back to Mr. Kirby. Let's focus more on the role that NATO is playing here. Well, Russia says that it's moving its troops because of NATO is getting closer to its borders. How do you think NATO can help de-escalate these tensions?
Well, the thing that the Russians want is for NATO to back off and to guarantee that especially the Ukraine and the nations of the Caucasus Mountains will never become a part of the organization. So essentially, some sort of guarantee that These nations will never be part of NATO. That would certainly help. The Russians offered are asking to reel back NATO to basically the 1997 borders, from what I understand, which would essentially remove pretty much the entire Warsaw Pact except for East Germany, which is now part of Germany. That is extremely unlikely to happen. I doubt NATO can boot someone out of its structure in order to create a more peaceful environment in Eastern Europe, but making some deals to sort of dump the Ukraine as an entire in its entirety in order for some sort of stability in Europe is very possible. We shouldn't forget that I think Russia would be very happy to take some sort of deal where they essentially get a sphere of influence over Ukraine, Moldova, basically their former Soviet territory, and essentially give away the entirety of the rest of Europe to NATO, the EU, and Washington.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tim Kirby, radio host and political analyst, and Mr. Greg Simons, researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies. Thank you very much for sharing your views. I'm afraid that's all the time that we have for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for following us. On, Rindia reports nearly 142,000 new COVID infections in the past 24 hours, setting another record in its daily case counts. The figure is the highest in India since the end of May. The country already saw its daily case count pass 1,000 on Friday for the first time in 7 months. COVID cases have been steadily rising in India in recent days due to the Omicron variant. The new strain is overtaking Delta that caused a health crisis there last spring. Restrictions have already taken effect in some cities, including an overnight curfew in the capital, New Delhi. India's total COVID infections are now above 35.37 million, one of the highest in the world. Total COVID deaths in Mexico passes 300,000. That is the fifth tally in the world, after the U.S., Brazil, India, and Russia. The Mexican tally includes 168 new fatalities recorded only in the past 24 hours. The country also registered more than 28,000 new infections, and that is the second highest daily case number there since the start of the pandemic. Mexico's total infections are above 4 million. The country has seen a surge of infections in recent weeks, particularly in its tourism hotspots following the holiday season. Despite the surge, which is driven by Omicron, Mexico has kept its borders open. The country requires no tests or vaccination passes from arriving travelers. No new restrictions have been announced either. And the U.S. Labor Department says the country has added more than 20,000 jobs in December. That is the United States' worst month of job creation in 2021. Economists had forecast a job growth of double that number. The slump is attributed to a surge of COVID-19 cases and the reimposition of restrictions fueled by the highly contagious Omicron variant. The new strain has sickened millions of Americans and forced airlines to cancel thousands of flights. Many are also reluctant to go back to work. In 2021, the U.S. economy bounced back from the pandemic, but payrolls remain well below the pre-pandemic levels. U.S. employment is still more than 3 million jobs lower than what it was in February 2020. The most recent missile test by North Korea was probably a reminder that Pyongyang does not intend to abandon its pursuit of advanced weapons. In the next report, we will see why the North feels that it needs to boost its defenses. Just days into 2022, North Korea carried out a major weapons test. It launched a hypersonic missile this week, with North Korean media saying the projectile precisely hit its target at a distance of 700 kilometers. This was North Korea's second test of a hypersonic missile. Unlike ballistic missiles that fly up into outer space before returning to hit their targets with a somehow predictable trajectory, hypersonic weapons fly at lower altitudes and can achieve more than five times the speed of sound.
Analysts say, however, the main feature of hypersonic weapons is not their speed, but their maneuverability makes them much harder to detect by radar. The North is currently part of a small group of countries, including the United States and China, in trying to develop hypersonic military technologies.
They have a plan. They have a plan that is public. There is no secret. Is available. And so they have several devices, several weapon range that they want to develop. And one category is the hypersonic one.
The latest test firing came days after North's leader Kim Jong-un pledged once again to boost Pyongyang's defenses. He said in a New Year's speech that Pyongyang would continue to strengthen its capabilities because the Korean Peninsula still faces an increasingly unstable military environment. North Korea tested different projectiles last year amid stalled talks with the United States and its southern neighbor. Under former U.S. President Donald Trump, America and North Korea came close to a conflict before a series of meetings between the two adversaries' presidents. The high-profile summits broke down with no agreement, making Trump's approach towards North Korea another one of his major failures.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Once every 100,000 years, gold is created from the collision of neutron stars. Mysterious gold instantly melted into humanity's desire to contain the magic which enabled civilizations to flourish and fueled the desire that made people venture across oceans. But why do we lust after gold? And does humanity own gold? Or does gold own humanity? I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For centuries, Gold was the economic index which dominated the world before it lost to the dollar. But the 2008 financial meltdown has brought gold back from oblivion. Gold is now dominating the world once again, but why is it gold again? In 2008, gold woke up from its deep, dark sleep. As the dollar became unstable during the U.S. financial crisis, people rushed to gold. And in August of 2011, the twisted destiny recurred. The new gold rush started again. Pursuit has begun once again, and stay with us as we take a look into the history of gold from its glittering past to its sudden return.
Gold.
That is gold.
Kingai.
Kingo.
Gold.
Gold.
With gold.
Gold.
Il oro.
The oro.
Oro.
Into gold.
So gold.
Gold.
Gold price.
Gold mines.
Gold is undervalued.
Currency, which reflects human instincts, is very much alive. Money gained humanity's passionate desire since its creation. Money was at the center of wars and economies. Its origin can be traced back to Mesopotamia. Thousands of years ago, Sumerians were the first ever to develop trade. Since then, many types of currency have appeared in history. Trading goods for goods appeared first. Grains, essential for everyone, were used as currency in many areas. As time passed, smaller objects were used for trading to facilitate easier transportation and exchange. Various metals became the new currency, as they were easily transportable and did not rot. But not all metals were permanently stable. In the end, gold, whose value was accepted consistently as a stable metal, became the best currency. Gold, which is evaluated by its weight and purity, has no exchange rate or nationality. Due to its high value, large trades were made possible with just small amounts of gold. It was the best currency that was accepted everywhere. In 700 BC, the kingdom of Lydia, which ruled Turkey, became the birthplace of the best invention in the history of currency. The capital of the kingdom was Sardis. It was the hub of the East and West, and as trading became important, the need for currency grew. Lydia dominated Asia Minor. It expanded its boundaries as the ancient empire, securing the trade route linking an area of over 2,700 kilometers. Lydia invented the world's first gold coins, using their abundant resources of gold, and built an affluent kingdom.
And this started with King Croesus of Lydia, which is a very famous name,
And he really produced the first gold coins and used it particularly to pay soldiers and military people.
In the early 7th century BC, Lydians minted the world's first coins. Gold coins, which feature a lion's head, the symbol of Lydia, became the kingdom's representative export goods. As the world's first gold coins and the world's first empire currency, Lydia's coins spread through Asia Minor and Greece. They became a necessity for trade in the Mediterranean. Goods, art, people, and knowledge gathered in Lydia, and humanity's first retail businesses began. With a single shiny gold coin, people were able to buy horses or delicious food. It also reduced shopping time. A new world had opened up for humanity. But if the Lydians were the first to invent coins, the Greeks were the first to turn coin making into an art form. Each city imprinted its own unique symbols. They were the symbols of national strength. Greek coins circulated the Mediterranean through marine commerce. Gold coins brought revolutionary developments in commerce and became the foundation of civilizations. Education also developed quickly along with the coins. Five 500 years after the birth of gold coins, the currency revolution moved to Rome. Coins featuring the emperor's face, as well as other royalty, were widely used among laymen. As the territory of the Roman Empire expanded, the amount of gold attained through looting and mining grew exponentially. Consequently, the Romans issued more gold coins, and these coins strengthened the empire. Gold coins were what built the Roman Empire. In 395 AD, after the Roman Empire divided into two, Western Rome collapsed within the next 100 years. However, the surviving Eastern Rome continued to write history for another 1,000 years. Constantine the Great moved Rome's capital to Byzantium and founded the Byzantine Empire. Constantine the Great, who reunited Rome, declared freedom from religion and chose Sunday as a day of rest. He also issued a new gold coin called solidus. This is Byzant, the best currency. The Byzant, with a 98% purity, weighed 4.5 grams. The Byzant was the basic currency of the Middle Ages that everyone could trust and use. it was the longest surviving currency in history.
Really ran from about 500, well, really 300 AD, but 500 AD in Istanbul itself, and lasted for almost 1,000 years, really with the weight and the purity of it unchanged. There were some years when it was a problem, but it did last almost for 1,000 years, the Byzantine solidus. It was a thousand year coin, if you like.
The Byzant was the revenue source to maintain a large army and the means of controlling the empire. That is why the Byzant is called the dollar of the Middle Ages. The dollar of the Middle Ages surpasses today's dollar in terms of stability and value. While today's dollar faced a crisis within 100 years, the Byzant survived for 1,000 years. The Byzant was the partner that supported the kingdom for 1,000 years. The value of gold transcends time and space and gives faith to people. But there was a critical weakness even to gold, the best currency. There is a limit to the production of gold, and there are three ways to overcome the limit. One was to endure the lack of currency, and the other was to bring in gold from other regions through trade and loot. The last method was currency degradation, by making more coins with the same amount of gold. People began to deceive others by making new coins using clipped edges of existing coins.
And up until 1696, coins were struck onto a rough blank. So you used to be able to, if you were a very unscrupulous silversmith, you could clip the edges and get free silver. And so there were many laws that were passed to try and stop this. And in 1696, what they did was that they made sure that all the coins were circular with a milled edge. So that stopped the practice of coin clipping.
This is the origin of how the coin edges look today. Clipping of coin edges brought many problems. The value of currency fell, and prices began to inflate. New coins had to be issued to win people's trust. Sir Isaac Newton stepped up to solve all these problems.
And one of his big responsibilities was to prevent forgery. So one of the ways he did that was by making sure that all the coins had a milled edge around them, because if the edge is milled with little grooves, it's impossible to clip off a little bit of the coin.
The grooves on the coins that Newton made are used on today's coins as well. The grooves mark the human greed for gold. Gold, however, was never used as the main currency in the East. As the value of gold developed the currency system in the West, brass coins backed by the government played a similar role in the East. Whether it be gold or a brass coin, if the receiver had trust in it, that was enough. People had faith in the government. the first coins in the East were made during the Jin Dynasty. They believed the sky was round and the land was square. So they made a round coin with a square hole in the middle. This shape became the basic shape of Eastern coins for 2,000 years. The trust of currency gave birth to the world's first paper money in China. Gyoza, issued in Buxong in 1023, was the first paper money. When Emperor Kublai Khan of the Yuan Dynasty mass-produced bozhou and circulated them through Eurasia, the era of paper currency began. Paper money was made of paper, but it ceased to be just ordinary paper. Kublai Khan is described as an alchemist in the travels of Marco Polo. Paper currency was like magic to the Westerners who were using gold coins. During the Yuan Dynasty, the government forcefully retained gold, silver, and copper, and with its guarantee, paper money was issued. With the circulation of paper money, less money was spent on producing coins, which led to a better financial status of the government, and thus led to a more active commerce. Replacing the gold with paper money opened up a new golden era in the East. At the end of the 15th century, gold had cast a spell on people and made them cross the oceans, risking their lives. But the lives of Europeans were also shaken up by gold. At the time, the population which had been devastated by the plague was bouncing back. Price of commodities was also increasing. Moreover, as gold and silver from the New World poured into Europe, prices soared uncontrollably. The price revolution of the 16th century began. Treasure from the New World created a large gap between the rich and the poor.
And this is at a time when that is much more than a week's earnings in the late. It's more like 2 weeks' earnings. So it is a lot of time to earn the smallest coin. And therefore, ordinary people do not have gold coins. It is something for the rich to have.
Prices quadrupled and sextupled. First, landowners who received a consistent amount of rent went bankrupt. Farmers who didn't have money to rent land became wage laborers. On the other hand, the royal families and noblemen enjoyed an unprecedented extravagance. Gold instantly spread throughout European countries, and in its wake, only collapsed industries and financial crisis remained. Such was the curse of gold. The price revolution continued on for over 100 years without any resolution. It was the longest inflation in history. When commerce expanded and capitalism developed, a barter economy emerged. A system of an exchange of promissory notes for foreign currency began. 48 types of gold coins used in Europe in the 16th century were all exchangeable. Thus, financial innovation was propelled by the power of gold. In the early 19th century, gold faced a new era. Money was dependent upon the value of gold. A system of gold and money exchange emerged. Since then, history repeatedly introduced and discarded the gold standard. In 1819, England pegged the value of pounds to gold and circulated paper money that could be exchanged for gold at any time. By 1870, most countries had adopted the gold standard, and the pound, which could be exchanged for gold, became the key currency around the world.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We will be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Dear brothers and sisters, achieving perfection is the goal of life. It is the whole and sole objective of a religious man's life. Now, what is perfection? It's also a very important question. You know, I did mention in the previous episode that perfection is not achieved unless one gives room and space to reason. Allama Tabatabai says in his Islamic teachings in brief that a house is perfect when it provides for all the needs of a family's living, such as enough rooms to serve as a living room, a guest house, a kitchen for making food, a bathroom, and other rooms. If it lacks these utilities, it is proportionately deficient. The same is the case with man whose goal is to seek perfection, you know. Whole and sole objective of a person's life is to achieve perfection. Perfection in the case of a human being means that he should achieve those qualities which are good for his prosperity, which are instrumental in his felicity, and in bringing him felicity, of course. Allama Tabatabai also says that the attribute of perfection is that which meets some of the needs of existence, obviates deficiency. For example, the epithet of knowledge obviates the darkness of ignorance and elucidates what is known to the scholar. Also, power enables a powerful person to attain his ends and satisfy his demands and makes him competent to do so. So this is what Allama Tabatabai says in his book Islamic Teachings in Brief. It is obviously incumbent on anyone who wishes to achieve perfection to avoid extravagance on either side. He should not go to extremes. He should rid himself of the harmful inclinations. And these harmful inclinations, of course, stem from evil traits. He should change them into useful and beautiful feelings. Such feelings can only appear good if they are obedient to the command of reason. As long as reason dominates the human life, he is always following the right path. He is always moving in the right direction, because whatever the reason commands is in line with the religion, and whatever religion says is accepted by the reason. There is no contradiction and conflict between reason and religion. Human feelings are like a container that is divided in two sections, the first section being offensive and the other defensive. If man can direct his defensive feelings to become victorious over the offensive ones, then he will gain control of his existence and lead it as he desires, not as they desire. So this is also just an explanation of a psychologist. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor, cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Those who have balanced their internal powers with their lusts and that which their dreams prefer, and have created a sense of peace between their minds and hearts, have undoubtedly followed the path of happiness between the problems of life, will free of weakness, free of failure or defeat, you know. There is no doubt as to the fact that man's abilities have reached a very advanced level of practicality, movement, and speed. And this has, of course, given mankind the chance to reach deep into the depths of seas and oceans using his thinking powers. What we observe today of the continuous misery and fluctuation in the heart of civilization, especially in the United States and America, and of course those countries that claim to be civilized, what we see today in terms of misery and fluctuation has reached the point that it has become like a toy in the hands of problems and afflictions. This can be largely due to the fact that man has diverted from the path of noble traits and spiritual values. When man diverts and deviates from the path of spiritual values, from the path of noble traits, then there's no doubt that he will suffer misery and he will suffer afflictions beyond imagination. Science has advanced in this era. We have no doubt about it, that science is in its peak. But manners and feelings are still in their primitive stages. Manners have not advanced. Now, what happens if science advances but manners do not? Obviously, man in that case will always tend to misuse science, misuse this capacity. And there's no doubt that if manners and feelings had advanced along with reason and along with the human mind, then we could possibly state that mankind advanced and their humanity too. So unfortunately, that is not what we see on the ground. Manners have not advanced. Humanity is in reality degenerating. It is kind of going backward, despite the fact that science has advanced tremendously and it has advanced beyond imagination, but manners have not advanced. And as I said, manners are still in their primitive stages. Let's also conclude that the civilization that lacks noble traits faces destruction and extinction, because that civilization will not persist, it will not continue, because there is no noble traits, there is no moral values, there is no moral support and spiritual support to keep it up. So it's doomed. A civilization that does not have noble traits, and a civilization that lacks noble traits, is doomed. In the absence of course, noble traits, nothing persists, nothing will hold. The reason for the persisting miseries, persisting imperfections in various societies, is a phenomenon of people's needs for moral values, is the phenomenon for people's needs for moral traits, for manners. It is the values that give life to the people, but also a civilization. It is the values that not only give life to humanity, but it also gives life to civilization. And it is those values that grant it the power that civilization righteously deserves. So civilizations, in fact, depend wholly and squarely on moral traits. Civilization will not continue to subsist and will not continue to stand on its feet unless there are noble traits and moral values which guarantee it is continuity, it is survival, and it is existence. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.